Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Sod 2 of For the Record program number 466, titled An Interview with Mark Ortiz. This is being recorded on June 27th of the year 2004. And once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to present Mark Ortiz, a name known to veteran listeners to these broadcasts. Mark was my co-host on the Uncle Sam on the Swastika broadcast from May of 1980, the first of the archive shows. Mark is now running for the Democratic nomination for Congress in the 8th Congressional District of North Carolina. Mark, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Hello, hello, and thanks for having me.
Once again, very quickly, for listeners that may have just tuned in, you have four major planks, so to speak, on your platform, your candidate's platform. Briefly summarize those for us, and we'll proceed then.
Really investigate 9/11, honest elections with genuine ballots, keep our troops and jobs at home, preserve the Bill of Rights, repeal the Patriot Act, pass the Civil Liberties Restoration Act.
All righty. Now, let's return to the subject of the electronic voting. Now, in Side 1, we took a look at a couple of passages from Kevin Phillips' book, American Dynasty, and in that, Kevin talks about the Machiavellian political instincts and dictates of the Bush dynasty. Machiavelli advocated lying, deceit, posing, the cynical use of religion as a tool for political control. And one of the things that that led to was a discussion of just what it is that we may be facing in the 2004 election. Mark and I agree that the powers that be, the seated incumbent and related elements are not going to want to be turned out in November. Therefore, one has to stop and ask oneself, what are they planning on doing if, in fact, defeat looms? And that's something that wouldn't surprise me. By the way, one thing we should interject, Mark, I want to interject quickly. I think that there is something that I would categorize as a civil war literally going on within the U.S. political, intelligence, military, and law enforcement establishments. I think there are very, very powerful elements in this country who very much want to see Bush and company out of office. And I think there is a bitter and brutal, and perhaps at some point lethal struggle underway between the pro-Bush team and the anti-Bush team. And again, I think
that's true, both within the Republican Party and between the Democrats and Republicans. And in fact, this is a normal dynamic that you see in politics. It's very difficult to keep a group that gets power from splitting.
Well, also, I think that one of the real splits in the political, military, intelligence, and law enforcement establishments, and the economic establishment, concerns not only viability of management, but legality of management. And among the things the Bush administration has engaged in are not only gross criminal acts, something relatively routine for the Bush dynasty, but also they have done great damage to America's image abroad. We've become in many ways a pariah nation. They have fallen into what I consider to be a predetermined trap in Iraq, in which we basically have pitted ourselves in a long, perhaps interminable, perhaps for the U.S. fatal struggle against the Muslim population of what the German geopoliticians called the Earth Island. They've done things to the economy that have outraged even some of the most conservative elements of the financial and economic establishment. And also with not only the Iraq misadventure, but also such things as the outing of Valerie Plame, the wife of former U.S. Ambassador to Niger Joseph Wilson,
right,
whose identity as a CIA covert operative was deliberately leaked by elements within the Bush administration. So the CIA is extremely upset, or elements thereof are extremely upset with the Bush administration. All in all,
you're probably familiar with Truthout.
Yeah, yes, it's a website. Yes.
Yep, and there have been articles reprinted there saying just what you're enumerating here, that that Bush has made a fatal error in crossing the CIA, and that may in fact do him in if nothing else does.
Yeah, there are a lot of irons in the fire. Plus, he has I would submit, and maybe this will sound crazy to some people, but I would submit that among the victims In the Iraq War is the U.S. military itself. It is badly strained. Many of the troops that have served over there are at the limits of their endurance, and that's not to knock them, but rather to say this campaign was badly planned. Elements of the general staff are extremely upset with the Bush administration over their cavalier disregard of the forecast in this regard. Counter-terrorist specialists are outraged Bush is basically doing exactly what Osama bin Laden's fondest wishes would have engendered, I should say.
Not coincidentally, I think.
Well, we'll see what happens. I've said in no uncertain terms that I thought that, vis-a-vis Iraq, that we were being lured into a trap that would then leave us in an interminably expensive and perhaps for us and a lot of other people fatal conflict. With the Muslim
population of those either.
The point being,
came of age during another one.
Well, we came of age during Vietnam. This, I suspect, may be very, very much worse. The Vietnamese weren't in a position to attack on American home soil, and it remains to be seen whether some of the derivatives of al-Qaeda, some of the Islamist successors or other outcroppings of the Muslim Brotherhood are capable of doing that with some of their fifth column allies in various sectors. I would also note that the economic policies of this administration have outraged many, many people, even very, very conservative people within the financial and industrial establishments, who simply are not fond of George Bush breaking the bank. A lot of dyed-in-the-wool conservatives are angry at many of the programs that he's engendered. There also is a group of former generals and diplomats, most of them former Republican appointees in either the Reagan or first Bush administrations, who were extremely upset with the Bush policies. All of which is to say that I think, again, there's a very sharp divide in the power structure of the U.S. right now, and I would submit that there is something very much akin to a civil war going on, and that might offer some prospects for hope if, in fact, the anti-Bush faction can take charge. On the other hand, a wounded beast can, under certain circumstances, be more dangerous, particularly when it has the capabilities of this beast. And returning again to what we were talking about in Side 1, what would Machiavelli do if he were facing the possibility of being unseated? Real quick, we were talking about electronic voting. If you could synopsize for us, Mark, encapsulate some of the discussion from Side 1 about Diebold, who the head of it is, and some of the irregularities that we saw in, first of all, a county in Florida in 2000, and also the off-year elections in Nebraska and in Georgia, vis-a-vis the Diebold machines.
Right. Basically, there has been flagrant evidence in various forms that the machines were miscounting the votes. There were votes being counted as negatives in Florida. They were Gore votes. There have been elections in which the machines have returned vote totals greatly in excess of the number of voters who were recorded as having shown up at the polls. In Georgia, one of the first all-electronic elections in the country, the results were grossly at odds with exit polls and pre-election polls. Again, heavily in favor of the Republicans, and the other voting machine company that is second most prominent in the United States deserves mention in addition to Diebold. It's called Sequoia Pacific Corporation, and it operates through a number of additional dummy front companies, including Electech, formerly Shooptronics. There are a number of other names that they put on these electronic election machines, but this is Election Services and Software out of Omaha, Nebraska, and this is connected with Sequoia Pacific.
Now, that's the company, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that the company with which Chuck Hagel is associated?
Exactly.
And he is a Republican senator whose election or whose margin of election in the 2002 off-year elections raised some eyebrows.
Right. Now, I was talking about Hopsicker's video on Sequoia Pacific, and what he looks at a great deal in this video is an election before the year 2000 in Louisiana, where there, where some of these Sequoia machines were used. The same machines were decommissioned in Louisiana after a scandal involving bribery of Jerry Fowler, the Louisiana election commissioner, by Sequoia Pacific. And it turns out that this was, I believe, the 98 election, in which there were a number of referenda on the Louisiana ballot that had to do with gambling legalization. And it turns out that Sequoia Pacific is heavily involved in video gaming machines, including electronic poker and other video gaming for cash machines used in casinos and gambling riverboats. So they had a much bigger stake in this election than just selling some vote counting machines. They bribed Jerry Fowler, and he was convicted of taking a bribe that was in excess of the total price of the machines sold, indicating that for this to be worthwhile for Sequoia Pacific, they were buying something other than the sale of the machines. The video shows a woman running for, I believe it was city council in Baton Rouge, or I didn't write down her name, but in any case, she went and wanted to inspect the voting machines, and the company let her into a warehouse where the machines were completely unsecured, meaning that no recount would have been valid, and she asked the man to show her how the machine worked. It did, in fact, print out a little receipt in this case out the back, and she asked him to show her how it worked, and he took the top off, and he said, well, if you punch this key, it works this code, and this name comes out on the ballot. And she tried that and tried it on a number of machines, and she found that on many of them, when she pressed her own name, a vote got tallied for her opponent. So she's on the video testifying about this. Turns out that these machines were later reused in the Florida election. Same machines.
Meaning now the same type of machine, or the actual same?
The actual same machine.
The units.
Yeah.
Oh,
man. The actual
man.
Physical units.
Do you know what counties they reused in Florida?
Don't know for sure. Don't know for sure.
Interesting.
Anyway, they followed the train of bribery because this came out in court, and therefore some of the names of the principals were available from the newspaper articles. And it turns out a lot of them are people who've been convicted of various gangster activities in New Jersey, including one Pasquale Rocco Ricci from Marlton, New Jersey, who got a light sentence of 1 year home detention. Supposedly in New Jersey, but when Hopsicker went to his New Jersey home in the winter, he wasn't there. He was at his palatial estate, formerly owned by Jim Baker, in Louisiana, where he wasn't supposed to be.
Jim Baker, now, there's not James Baker, but you mean the televangelist?
I'm talking about the televangelist, yes.
Okay, right, as in Jim and Tammy Faye.
That's that Jim Baker, not okay. James Baker, the Republican. But in any case, after Baker had his financial scandals, he ended up selling this estate, and Ricci is the one that ended up buying it.
Praise the Lord.
Turns out Hopsicker also visited the offices of Electech, formerly Shooptronics, in New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
named after its founder Ransom Shoop, who was convicted of various gangster activities and was doing time in New Jersey at the time that Hopsicker visited Electech. Well, it turns out that Electech was nothing but a big empty warehouse. So this company is operating in gangland havens through dummy front companies, and they are heavily involved in video gaming machines. And that is the second heaviest supplier in the nation of these electronic voting machines.
So sort of Soprano's electoral software.
He actually, Hopsicker even talks about the Sopranos, and he's he says a lot of the people he encountered in the course of this investigation were like extras on the Sopranos.
Well, that is something that has not had a lot of publicity. That there has been a certain amount of publicity about the Diebold machines and about the resolve on the part of the owner of the company, Mr. Odell, to deliver Ohio to George Bush.
Right.
One has to wonder whether under the table he plans on delivering a whole lot more than that. But Sequoia is something that had not received that much notice.
Not so, much. No, now, my position on all of this is that while these connections and nefarious deeds of the principals of these companies are worth knowing about, really, we shouldn't even have to, it shouldn't be an issue whether we can trust them. We shouldn't be in a position of having to trust anybody to count the votes. It should be visible and it should be observed. And it shouldn't be a matter of just having confidence in some machine or some company or some individual who counts them where nobody can see.
Now, another thing that one of the criticisms that had been raised about Diebold, in addition, obviously, to the fact that the machines, and this may apply to Sequoia as well, can be deliberately structured in such a way as to fudge the election results. A lot of people have also, people who are computer savvy and professional hackers, have also maintained that the Diebold software is anything but secure and that outside hackers
absolutely
could come in and mess things up pretty well as yet a second tier of possible interference.
That's correct. I do always try to emphasize when I discuss this issue that the prevailing pattern of election rigging, not only in this country but worldwide, is that elections are most commonly rigged by those in charge of running them. But that is certainly a possibility that additional outside people could also tamper. So that it just makes another reason for not trusting the machines. And another point that's got to be raised is that we're only talking about the machines that are out there today. Now, if you know anything about computer technology, you know that it's constantly changing. So if we bring this stuff in, we're dealing with, you know, how many Windows operating systems have we seen since the last couple of elections? They're constantly upgrading, patching, changing, and we have nothing to tell us whether any of this stuff is valid or is rigged or even works reliably except one expert or another expert. And in this election in Georgia, with the anomalous results, you had experts working for Diebold claiming things were wrong, other experts hired by Diebold claiming, "Nah, these people are out to lunch. You can't believe them. Everything's fine." So when you're reduced to trusting experts to tell you about the validity of a process you can't see, it's an endless can of worms, because the company or anybody who's rigging the election can either overtly or covertly hire their own experts to tell the public it's not rigged. And who do you believe? If you can't see and you don't understand the systems, you simply don't know. And that is a fundamental problem, regardless of who runs the election machine companies or what their loyalties are.
Now,
I am holding out for manual, observed counting of actual paper ballots. We can talk about the paper trail legislation, because this is a leading contender to offer an alternative to these paperless machines.
Perhaps you can dovetail into that from the question that I'm about to ask, Mark. A number of people have suggested that a good way to do an end run around the possibility of electronic voter fraud would be to get an absentee ballot. What's your response to that suggestion?
It's a mixture of good and bad. The absentee ballot is inescapably paper, although who knows? In the future, maybe not. But at present, all absentee ballots are paper. The problem with absentee ballots is that they're, the chain of custody of those ballots is problematic. They end up getting sent in one by one in the mail, and what happens to them then? Nobody is there to observe. Basically, you're trusting your county board of elections not to lose your ballot, not to forge any, and it's entirely possible for them to do that. In fact, in the Florida election, there was a big scandal about the Republicans completing absentee ballots that were filled out incompletely so that they could be counted. The poll workers who were working for Jeb Bush, of course, were actually completing ineligible ballots for the voters. They were also counting ballots that had mailing dates after the day of the election improperly. So absentee ballots are not by any means foolproof, even though they are paper. The other problem with absentee ballots is that it is very, very important to preserve the secrecy of the ballot. It is really important, especially when you're dealing with a regime that may in the future lock people up, go after enemies, etc. It's very important and has long been recognized as vital that the ballot not be traceable to the voter. An absentee ballot inevitably is a ballot that you cast with your name attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a problem there with absentee ballots. So it's not a foolproof solution, but you are certainly correct that many people are suggesting that people vote absentee. The other thing that's being advocated is the so-called paper trail legislation.
Yeah, tell us about that.
That's House Bill 2239, a parallel bill in the Senate. I forget its number. I believe it's 18-something. Anyway, there are two rival bills also in the Senate, one of them from Hillary Clinton, which are somewhat less stringent. What House Bill 2239 calls for is it calls for the machine to print out a paper record of how you voted that you can see. And you then give that to the poll workers, and it is used as a backup in event of a recount. The legislation also calls for spot checks in 0.5% of the precincts, where randomly chosen precincts will be hand-counted based on those receipts. And if there are anomalies revealed by the spot checks, that triggers a full manual recount for the state or district or whatever is at issue. Now, this is something that, if elected, I would probably vote for. However, I think it's inadequate because, first of all, a small quantity of spot checks is a corruptible system. Either there can be a way that the election officials can know where the spot checks are going to happen in advance. They can either, tap phone calls, or it can simply be covertly arranged. After all, if you can rig an election by other means, surely you can have a little jiggery-pokery with which precincts are going to get checked.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way for anybody to verify that that is not going on. Secondly, it's entirely possible that in some precincts or some regions, the count that goes out over the wire from the machine is not identical to the receipt that is printed out. And if the spot check happens to miss that particular location, it goes completely undetected. So there are problems with even House Bill 2239. Now, the system that we have had in this country since its inception. It's been in constant change. It was really, really loose immediately following the election, especially in the hinterlands, where there was basically people could write their own ballots, basically. But the whole system of having a unit called a precinct is predicated on manual counting, just like having something called a county is predicated on the idea that you should be able to ride to the county seat on horseback within a day.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea of having precincts is set up around manual counting. So it's not something that cannot be done. And in fact, both Canada and Sweden to this day use observed manual counting, and in Canada they have all their ballots counted by 4 hours after the polls close.
So in other words, for a naysayer who would argue that this is too cumbersome, expensive, impractical, et cetera, so that is not the case.
Not the case. Being used by advanced industrial countries, and in fact, the whole layout of our precinct system is predicated on manual counting. Now, the League of Women Voters has gotten behind the electronic paperless machines, but there are now a lot of people within the League of Women Voters who are having dramatic second thoughts about this, and it is threatening to split the League of Women Voters. It's an extremely divisive issue, and in view of its importance, it's easy to see why.
All right, Mark, we are almost out of time here. What I'm going to ask you to do is to give a contact information, again, for listeners who may have just tuned in. My guest is Mark Ortiz, my co-host almost a quarter of a century ago on the Uncle Sam and the Swastika broadcast, the very first of the archive shows. Mark is running for the Democratic nomination for the 8th Congressional District of North Carolina. And, Mark, for people that would like to find out more about your candidacy, how can they contact you?
First, by email, markortiz@vnet.net. That's MARKORTIZ at vnet, V as in Victor, net.net. By phone, 704-933-8876, 704-933-8876. And I have a website up at markortizforcongress.org, no W's.
Okay.
No W kind of guy.
And when I have a description for this interview up on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com, there will be a link to that website. So I take it that this information, that the topics we've talked about are actually set forth in literature in print so that listeners can examine this at greater length and in greater detail, correct?
Correct. Right now, all that's up on the website is a welcome article that does enumerate my 4 points, and it has topics that you can click on to view other articles as time permits me to add them, and it also has a viewer poll about the new Michael Moore movie.
Okay. Mark, we are all out of time, so thanks for visiting with us. And
I sure appreciate the opportunity.
All righty. Well, listeners who would like to find out more about what you're advocating can contact you through the information that you've given on this interview and that will be available on the website. We've been visiting with Mark Ortiz, my former co-host on Uncle Sam and the Swastika, and currently vying for the Democratic nomination for the 8th Congressional District of North Carolina. For Mark Ortiz, this is Dave Emery saying this concludes Side 2 of For the Record 466, being recorded on June 27th of 2004. Thanks for listening.